and welcome to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Strasser. It's Thursday, February 27th, just straight up 3 o'clock. We have a fabulous show for you today, as we do every Thursday. Super excited. We've got George Kuhar talking about his new CD release party, actually, happening. That's tomorrow night at the Rockwell. We'll talk to him all about that. Carol Pitts, one of Aware's Women of Distinction, will be here to talk about her honor and all the other women of distinction. And we'll talk to some folks about Cat on a Hot Tin Roof that opens at Perseverance Theater next Friday. And Nancy DeCherney will be here, as she is every Thursday, with Arts Up. We've got Writer's Almanac and more here on Juno Afternoon. But first, let's hear National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Two First Nations leaders in Manitoba, Canada, have outlined plans for urban reserves in Winnipeg. Dan Karpinchuk has more on their ideas for economic development.
Dennis Meaches is the chief of the Long Plains First Nations, and Terry Nelson is the head of the Southern Chiefs Organization of Manitoba. They held a day-long conference on urban reserve development. Their plan is to set the stage for what they say will be promising Aboriginal and non-Native business partnerships. Nelson was only recently elected as the head of the Southern Chiefs and has long advocated for more urban reserves.
These are Indigenous lands, all of them, the whole city of Winnipeg. We need to develop urban reserves that are where we partner with the businesses here in Winnipeg.
Nelson says the proposal could generate as much as $400 million a year in retail sales, and that could mean $40 million going back to impoverished communities. He says the biggest obstacle to economic freedom for First Nations people is the Indian Act, which he compares to the Berlin Wall. The head of the Assembly of Manitoba Chiefs, Derek Nepinak, says the plan is a nice beginning, but there should be more discussions. Nepinak's support for the plan is the key to smoothing the way for economic development with federal and provincial governments. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
This week, the Spokane City Council switched its position on a gaming proposal. Steve Jackson has details.
2 years after opposing the proposed Spokane Tribe of Indians casino in the West Plains, the Spokane City Council has voted to switch its stance to neutral. One key factor in the city at first recommending the casino not be built was fear that the proximity of the casino would threaten nearby Fairchild Air Force Base. It's been speculated that the casino would be at risk from training flight patterns in the sky above. But at the city council meeting, the council president read a statement from two men involved in Air Force Base closures in 1991, saying that they did not think that the tribal facility would pose a threat to the base. Before the council vote, Spokane tribal member Greg Abramson talked about the need for the project in terms of jobs.
As of today, we have 22,828 tribal members enrolled and under 1,400 that live on a reservation with an unemployment at 51%. The state and federal governments would treat it as a crisis if they had to deal with unemployment at 51%.
The community where the casino is proposed to be built, Airway Heights, near Spokane, is already home to a casino hotel run by the Kalispell tribe. Final approval of the Spokane Tribe's project must come from the BIA and the Washington State Governor. For National Native News, I'm Steve Jackson reporting.
U.S. Senator Tom Udall has proposed two bills to improve access to health care for rural and Native communities in New Mexico. Tristan Autone has more.
Every county in New Mexico except one has been designated by the federal government as having a health care provider shortage. And beyond a shortage, surveys show that over half of the doctors in New Mexico were at capacity and unable to take on more than a handful of new patients. Senator Tom Udall has introduced two bills to address these problems. The first bill would create incentives and rewards to lure students wanting to pursue careers in primary care to rural areas. The second aims to create better options for veterans in search of services.
It will expand options for veterans to get care outside the VA system, including alternative medicine and Native American healing methods. It will also expand the transportation grant program so that rural programs will have more options when they need to get to faraway doctor's appointments.
The Democrat says the state's healthcare industry will grow up to 20% over the next decade and that his proposed bills could help spread those new jobs around the state to communities in need. For National Native News, I'm Tristan Autown.
In February 1973, Oglala Lakota people and followers of the American Indian Movement occupied the town of Wounded Knee, South Dakota, to draw attention to treaty rights. The incident drew international attention as it turned into a 71-day standoff with federal agents. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, and by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. National Native News is made possible with support from Guest House Anchorage Inn. Wake up with the sun. On the web at guesthousealaska.com. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And welcome back to Juneau Afternoon. It's Thursday, February 27th, and my name is Shona. And in the studio with me, I have George Kuhar with Playboy Spaceman. Hi, George. How are you doing?
Hey, Shona. I'm doing good. How about you?
Great. So, I'm really excited about your an album release party tomorrow.
That's right.
And so I think first we can kind of pop out the details, and then we'll talk a little bit more about what's going on.
Let's pop them out.
Okay. Yeah, so it's tomorrow evening at Rockwell upstairs.
Yeah, upstairs in the ballroom.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you have some people opening, actually, some other great local musicians
opening.
Yeah,
it's the Woolpullers, yeah. Alex and Liz, they're both amazing. Anybody who's listening right now, you probably have a good idea who they are. They're doing really well for themselves in town right now. They make some great songs, and actually they're going to have a percussionist with them tomorrow night, guy playing hand drums. So we heard them rehearsing last night, and it sounded really amazing. The hand drums really complemented their down-to-earth kind of sound, so it was really cool. I'm excited to see them.
Oh, well, yeah, me too. I love their voices blend really nice together.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So the new album, is it officially released, or is tomorrow?
Tomorrow's
like the
release day, yeah.
I love it. I love it. And it's called One Heart Army.
That's right.
And so how did you kind of come up with the title of this album, and how did that come about?
Well, I wrote a song called One Heart Army last spring, and it was one of the last songs to be written for this compilation, and I knew I was going to be making an album. And this song, actually, it started out, I started writing it on an app on the iPad.
Oh, really? The songwriting app, or like one of them?
Yeah, not a songwriting app, but like an app where you push some buttons and it plays some chords, and you can.
Oh, cool.
Anyway, it's a really neat app, but the recorded version of the song didn't sound anything like that demo that I made on the iPad. But that's where it started, and then it just had that tempo, and you know, where I was walking the dog at Twin Lakes, and walking, and it just felt like a march, and then it just came out, One Heart Army, the song. And eventually, as we started putting the songs together and recording them, and I was Betsy Sims recorded them at Studio A, and then after all the recording was done, I actually took it upon myself to mix it. And during the mixing process is when I decided that was going to be the title track, because there was definitely a cohesion of heartfulness and all the songs, and so that's the route I went. And I already had the artwork made. Actually, I'd made the artwork years ago for a different project, and it just seemed perfect. It all just seemed like it all belonged together.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because the artwork paired with the album title, it's a very strong image.
Oh, thanks. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, someone told me the other day what they liked about the artwork was that it's not fussy, which of course it isn't. You know, it's just something I scribbled out real quick, and for me that's a really good practice, because I can easily be too fussy with my work. So it's always good whenever I can just put something down and call it done, you know, right away.
Yeah, yeah. So these songs you've been writing over the course of several years, or
several years? Yeah, the oldest song I think was "Teach Me to Love," which I might have written about 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so I of course everybody has a different process for this, but what is your, you know, process as a songwriter?
It usually starts inside. It usually starts inside of me before I ever pick up an instrument or write a word down. It's like a feeling that becomes so strong that it just kind of overflows eventually and just kind of pours out of you. And so, you know, either it comes gushing out instantaneously, a feeling arises really quickly, or it comes over a long period of time. And then next is usually the vocal part usually comes next, before the words even, just the way it's going to sound and feel coming out of my mouth and coming out of my lungs.
Mm-hmm.
And then it all just kind of starts to take form after that, usually.
Yeah. And so you've had quite, speaking of your lungs, you have just a very distinctive, powerful voice. And I'm wondering, how did you come about singing? Do you have, training as far as, did you grow up choral singing or?
I wanted to be a guitar player at first when I was a kid. And I found a record that was hidden way in the back of my parents' record cabinet that they never listened to, and it was Simon and Garfunkel's Bridge Over Troubled Water.
A definite treasure.
And I looked on the back, and I saw, all songs written by Paul Simon. And I was like, wow, it just blew me away that somebody could write this, And so it was at that point that I wanted to write songs, and I started feverishly writing songs, and I haven't stopped since. But, of course, it became apparent, I need to sing, too, if I'm going to write songs.
Ah, so tricky.
Yeah. And I was in choir in high school. I wasn't necessarily a confident singer in choir. I really relied on my peers. I took vocal lessons for, maybe 6 or 9 months. And that was all right. But the thing that really helped me as a singer most of all was just being in a band and doing it, even when I had no business doing it, just doing it regardless of the fact. And I learned a lot in that time. And in that particular band, I played with it for a long time. I learned a lot about singing and using your own voice in its own way and connecting it with your voice, the physical part of it, with the non-physical part of it.
Yeah, that's interesting. So this isn't Playboy Spaceman. It's actually started with you and your lovely wife, Bridget Cross Kuhar.
Mm-hmm.
And you released an EP in 2012, and that's mm-hmm. called Tokyo. And now you've added, a couple more players to the band. And I was just wondering if you could talk a little bit about the impetus behind that and then who those folks are.
Oh, well, it just became apparent that it was heading too much in a technological direction, because just the two of us, we were relying a lot on technology to make a lot of sounds, especially live, and that was, we have a song on that EP called Born a Machine that was kind of like, the idea of the song is to urge people to, be human again, just inherit your body and your skin as a human and accept your flaws and everything. Not everything's going to run like a machine perfect all the time. So I think maybe during that process singing that song, I also had that dawning we need some more people in this band. We need some more human beings, some more beating hearts. It just kind of happened last spring. I started inviting some people, hey, do you want to do this project with me? I booked the studio time, and I put together some songs that I'd had, and it just went from there. It was Nicholas Wagner, who I'd played with before, it was Jason Messing, who I've known as a musician around town, and Simon Taylor, who I also knew as a musician around town. I'd met them in different ways and different places and everything, but they definitely all seemed to be the right fit for what I wanted to do.
It's fascinating because it sounds actually almost conceptual. It's like you needed more beating hearts. That's a very also another pretty good truth right there.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to take a listen to just a little bit of One Heart Army because it's the title track from the new album being released tomorrow by George Kuhar, and we'll be right back with George to just talk for a few more minutes. Here it is.
The age of grace.
Playboy Spaceman. That is the title track off their album One Heart Army that actually comes out tomorrow. And in the studio, I have with me George Kuhar. Wow. So it goes a lot of places already, just one song.
Yeah, quick on our feet.
So I did have a, I just was wondering if you could talk about some of the other songs on the album and just where they came from. And I know I read something about Sonnemann, pretty interesting. Little story there, too.
Yeah, named after Joseph Sonnemann, who used to live in that miner's cottage next to Bullwinkle's on Willoughby Avenue. That was the first place I lived when I came to Juneau. And, he lived in that house for a good long while, and when I was living there, he had just been diagnosed with Lou Gehrig's disease. And after I moved out, I didn't see him ever again. We did exchange some emails. But then he died within a year or two after that, and they converted that house into the Twilight Cafe. And the first time I went in there, I had a cup of tea or coffee, and I went on the back porch, and they had a plaque on the back porch that said Sonnemann, and I really liked that you know, they acknowledged that, you know, that was his place.
Mm-hmm.
And after I left the Twilight Cafe, I just wrote that song. And that was, I just came really effortlessly. That was one of those times where I had an experience. It was like I experienced him, and it was like he gave that to me. I felt that very strongly, and I went home and I played it for Bridget, and she cried, and I knew, oh well, this is a song I got to keep doing. You know, like, you know, if it moves you that much, you know, right away, then it definitely means something. You have to listen to that.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting, talking about albums and songs that move you. It seems a departure from Tokyo, just kind of different. And as Playboy Spaceman, do you see yourself going from, say, you know, skipping genre to genre from album, or is it just something that you're just going to kind of play with as you grow as a band?
Yeah, well, you know, I wanted to, you know, when I play by myself with just a guitar, you know, it's George Kuhar for sure, right? But it's still me, and it's still my songs, and I'm still wearing pink socks. But I was on the fence about this for a while, but I finally realized, well, the thing to do is to embrace this pseudo-identity of Playboy Spaceman as like a, you know, whatever incarnation it takes as in any kind of form of video art or, you know, playing with other musicians in a band or whatever it is, embracing that as an artistic identity. The thing about, you know, making art is it's, you know, for me, I think it's silly to think that you're going to do something great and then do it again and again and again and again, because then it stops being art and you stop scaring yourself. And if it's not scary, then what's the point?
Right. It's lucky to happen once, really.
Yeah.
Yes, it is super scary. So speaking of the video, there's going to be some video tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And so is that something that you kind of, I mean, how does that work for you? Are you a person who, you know, as you're going through creating the song and writing the song, does the video, does the image come with you as you write, or is that something that comes later?
Sometimes it does, but mostly not. Or, you know, it maybe happens together at the same time. I'll be writing a song and I'll be working on a video and I'm not necessarily thinking about them going together. But then it also seems obvious, like, well, I worked on these at the same time. You know, they're from a place and they're from a time, and it means something. It's a testimony to that place and time. So pair those together. Why not?
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter if it makes sense or not. I mean, it doesn't have to.
Right. Well, it's a really exciting. We're going to, we have the CD release party tomorrow night, One Heart Army, Playboy Spaceman, George Kuhar here in the studio. You can check some stuff out online. You can check out Mysterious, a song from the album. You can check out the title song online, too. And definitely check out the show tomorrow night. What time does it get started, George?
The doors open at 9 o'clock, and the Wolfpullers will start soon after that, and they'll play a set, and then we'll play.
Awesome. And that's upstairs at the Rockwell, and there's it's only a $10 cover. I think that's just a screaming deal.
Yeah, I think so, too. But, you know, if you really want to spend money, we also have albums for sale and T-shirts and buttons.
I'm sporting a button right now.
All right.
You all should see it, Juno. It's looking good. George, thanks so much for coming to the studio.
Thank you, Shauna.
Yeah, and have a great show tomorrow night.
Thank you.
And here, we'll go out here with Right in Front of You. It's also a song off their album.
Is it the greedy or the
And that's right in front of you from Playboy Spaceman. And definitely check out their CD release, or album release. I keep saying CD. I'm old. Do you check that out tomorrow night at Rockwell upstairs. It's going to be a killer show. And in the studio with me, I'm very lucky to have Sarah Lynn Tabachnik and also Carol Pitts. And Sarah Lynn, of course, is executive director at the Aware Shelter. And Carol Pitts is one of the women of distinction. So welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, Sarah Lynn, I'll kind of start with you so you can give us an overview, because the Women of Distinction is actually such an honor. And I'm just wondering, how did the Aware Shelter actually come up with it, and what does it mean for you all?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, this is the 18th year that we've been honoring women. And so 18 years ago, it began when my mentor and predecessor, Annette Coggins, had this idea. And she brought Women of Distinction to Juno. So it was a lovely thing for me to inherit. And the community nominates women. We ask and solicit nominations. We get about 20 nominations. And then the board of directors has the really trying job, because they're great women doing great things, to narrow it down to 4 honorees each year. And we're so delighted that Carol's an honoree this year.
Yeah, and what is it, or what was it, I guess, about Carol that you just said, well, of course.
Well, let me tell you something about Carol, or let me tell you something about the community. Like, you maybe have heard about or even participated in the Salvation Army Thanksgiving, where at a local restaurant they serve hundreds of meals for people who don't have Thanksgiving somewhere. So I've heard about this, for example, year after year after year after year. And now I've met the woman who coordinates that year after year after year after
Carol,
year.
Carol, is that you?
It is.
So can you talk a little bit about actually what that event is? And because it is a huge, huge undertaking, and just something that is needed in our community. You've answered the call, essentially. So yeah.
Absolutely. That's one of the fun things that I get to do. Actually, all of the things that I get to do are fun. And that's one of the probably most noticeable, that and Christmas. But the Thanksgiving dinner is a it's a collaboration of a lot of different people in the community who get together and donate different items. And I am fortunate to get to coordinate all of that. And so the Salvation Army Advisory Board works very closely with me, and that's a big project for us every year. And we put together, collect all of the donations, go have the turkey smoked, and Dick Hand does that over at Southeast Alaska Seafood. And we have served this dinner at the hangar. And we have been doing that now I've been involved with it for about 18 years.
Wow.
And we are kind of a well-oiled machine when it comes to the Thanksgiving dinner. We have so many people in the community who want to volunteer. We have people who have raised their children volunteering on Thanksgiving. We have one young lady whose brother passed away some years ago at Thanksgiving, and she brings her children every year just to do that, volunteering at the dinner, because it helps her get through her day. And we served last year 474 people, and we have the governor, we have the mayors, we have state representatives, and a variety of people who just love to come and help us. And we enjoy being able to serve those who are in need, the homeless community, and those who just simply want to bring their guests and come down and have a nice restaurant meal at the hangar.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful thing that we get to do.
It certainly is. I'm curious as to how you actually started out in this kind of charitable work. And, I mean, was there a specific time in your life where you said, you know, it's time for me to give?
Well, I don't think there's ever been a time in my life that at least working through the Salvation Army, because my mother was a pillar in the Salvation Army in Kansas, and then I also served with Colorado and then here in Alaska, and I've been here for 22 years. So I grew up helping. Actually, I grew up very poor, but I didn't know that. I just knew we had to go help the poor people. And so my mother was a bell ringer. She was a teacher. She was a leader. She worked with the women's meeting. She worked with the children. And I was just automatically hauled along with her. And I wasn't ever given the option of whining or complaining because we didn't have anything. I was just told, you have something, you can give it to you. It's your time. Get in there and do it. And so favorite quote of mine is she would say, you know, wash your hands and make sandwiches. You can do that. So I was like very small up on a stool making sandwiches for an emergency disaster, because even as a child, I could do that. So I grew up actually just knowing that service to whatever community I was in and the surrounding areas was a part of my life.
Yeah.
And so my inspiration for that and motivation, which is one of the things that the Aware Shelter asks, is how did you get motivated to do that? And it's just always been a part of my life. And so I continue to do that in her memory. And I have drugged my children and my grandchildren along by the hand, and they have helped as well.
That's amazing. So what kind, I imagine it's pretty great, but I'm wondering what kind, what does it mean to you to be given this Woman of Distinction award?
Well, that was a real honor. I was humbled. When I got the call, I was actually down in Nebraska doing a mission that I felt needed to be taken care of. And I got the call, and to tell you the truth, I just expected Aware to be calling me asking for a donation, because they do that, and I own Orca Well Watching Tours. So I give donations for silent auctions to different philanthropic organizations around the community. And so it took me a little bit because I wasn't in a good place to get back. And I got back to her and they said, we're honoring you. And I'm like, honoring me for what? And I am so used to just doing it that I'm not really used to it being anything worthy of necessarily getting an award. And the thing that surprised me the most was that somebody knew enough of the different things that I do to write it down and present it for even a nomination. So I was humbled. I was very honored. And to tell you the truth, I am still, I'm getting excited because it's coming up now real soon. And so I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And mostly I'm just happy. It's hard for me to speak about myself, but I'm very happy to be able to be there and speak on behalf of the Aware Shelter, because it's such an amazing job that's done here for women and children in this community.
Yeah, definitely. And Sarah Lynn, I was hoping that you could share with us the names of the other awardees.
I'd be happy to. We are also honoring Noreen Otness, Patty Owen, Elaine Schroeder.
Wow, it's just a great evening. And as far as evenings go, when is it?
Saturday night. So that's just a couple nights away. The first day of March, it's at Centennial Hall. The program begins at 7 p.m. Doors open at 5:30. From 5:30 to 7, the Rob Cohen Jazz Trio will be playing music. We'll have a cash bar, and we have a tremendous silent auction, as Carol referred to. In fact, you could bid on a whale-watching tour from Orca Enterprises.
Nice. And are there tickets available still, and where can we get them?
Tickets can be purchased from Aware at 586-6623.
That's great. Well, Carol Pitts, thank you so much, and congratulations on
thank
your
you.
Honor. It's
a real honor.
So amazing. And Sarah Lynn, thank you for the information. And is there a website that people can go to for more information?
Sure. www.awareak.org.
Great. And thank you so much for everything that the Aware does for our community.
Pleasure. Thanks, Shona.
And here is Writer's Almanac, Little Garrison Keillor.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, the 27th of February, 2014. It's the birthday of Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, Portland, Maine, 1807, went off to Bowdoin College with Nathaniel Hawthorne. After the death of his wife Mary Potter from complications of a miscarriage, Longfellow found solace in reading German poetry and began writing poetry of his own. His first collection, Ballads and Other Poems, came out in 1841. It included The Wreck of the Hesperus and The Village Blacksmith, was very popular. 6 years later, Evangeline, then The Song of Hiawatha, then The Courtship of Miles Standish. And after the tragic death of his second wife, Fanny, in a fire, he translated Dante's Inferno. It was on this date, 1860, Abraham Lincoln gave a speech against slavery at Cooper Union in New York City. The Great Hall filled 1,500 New Yorkers curious to see this man from Illinois. One eyewitness said, "When he rose to speak, I was greatly disappointed. He was tall and so angular and awkward that I had for an instant a feeling of pity for so ungainly a man. But once Lincoln started to speak, quote, his face lighted up, the whole man was transfigured. I forgot his clothes, his personal appearance, his individual peculiarities. Forgetting myself, I was on my feet, like the rest, yelling like a wild Indian, cheering this wonderful man." The speech was reprinted widely. The New York Times printed it in its entirety on the front page the next day. It made Lincoln famous. He was invited to speak all over the country, and that summer the Republican Party named him their candidate for the 1860 presidential election. Speech that ended with the words, "Let us have faith that right makes might, and in that faith let us to the end dare to do our duty as we understand it." And it's the birthday of John Steinbeck, Salinas, California, 1902. Supported himself as a manual laborer, wrote about migrant workers. His first success was the novel Tortilla Flat in 1935, became a movie starring Spencer Tracy and Hedy Lamarr. Drove around California in an old bakery truck, looking at migrant workers, writing about them for a newspaper. And in less than 6 months, out of his own journal, he had a 200,000-word manuscript, Grapes of Wrath. John Steinbeck, who said, "We are lonesome animals. We spend all our life trying to be less lonesome." Here's a poem for today, a passage from John Greenleaf Whittier's long poem, Snowbound. All day the gusty north wind bore the loosening drift its breath before. Low circling round its southern zone, the sun through dazzling snow mist shone. No church bell lent its Christian tone to the savage air. No social smoke curled over woods of snow-hung oak. A solitude made more intense by dreary voiced elements, the shrieking of the mindless wind, the moaning tree boughs swaying blind, and on the glass the unmeaning beat of ghostly fingertips of sleet, beyond the circle of our hearth, no welcome sound of toil or mirth unbound the spell and testified of human life and thought outside. We minded that the sharpest ear the buried brooklet could not hear, the music of whose liquid lip had been to us companionship, and in our lonely life had grown to have an almost human tone. Lines from John Greenleaf Whittier's long poem, Snowbound. That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org/mobile. Produced by Joy Biles, assistance from Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work. Keep in touch.
And welcome back to Juno Afternoon. It is 3:40. It's Thursday, February 27th. And in the studio with me, I feel very lucky today. I've got to say it again. I have Robert Barry Fleming in the studio here, and he is the director for the upcoming production of Cat on a Hot Tin Roof that opens really soon here at Perseverance Theater. Hi, Robert.
Hi, Shauna.
Thanks. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so this is an interesting thing. We're just kind of talking about you coming to Juneau because you are from out of town.
I am from the Maryland area these days.
Okay, and so you're directing the show here, and so your work just takes you all over.
It does indeed. I've got a gig in San Diego after this one. I'll be heading back to D.C. for some work, and I've got the great privilege of being able to travel and do what I love.
Yeah, and so I did a little background research, of course, but you started out. I wasn't quite sure if you started out as an actor or choreographer, but you do all three, really.
I do. In fact, I started out as a gymnast who moved into movement, dancing, and then eventually into acting and choreographing and branching out and working behind the scenes. And so I had the great privilege of working with a lot of great mentors, a lot of great artists over the years who've helped me develop the way that I work as well. And that's just being added to in my collaboration here with the Perseverance Theater.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because we actually, we got your name and, your fabulous information about your body of work from Molly Smith, who is actually, the founder of Perseverance Theater.
Indeed.
And now the artistic director of the Arena Stage. And, of course, she was, glowing about you. And we're like, well, who should do this classic play? And she was like, I know the perfect man. And so I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about, because it wasn't just the Molly connection, but you also have a particular connection to Tennessee Williams. I was wondering if you could talk about that a little bit.
Sure. Well, I actually produced his work, one of the lesser known works, the two character play recently off Broadway, starring Amanda Plummer and Brad Dourif. And it was a kind of celebrated production from London that the lead producer caught wind of, brought over for a festival, and eventually I was fortunate to get on the team to bring it to Off-Broadway for its first New York revival. And so we had a very successful run with the show in the fall, and it actually invigorated a real sense of that love for his work. He's one of the great dramatists, one of the greatest that America's ever produced. I had the privilege of working in Memphis for a number of years, teaching as a professor, and certainly that sense of the Mississippi Delta and Memphis connection kind of is very much a part of celebrating Tennessee Williams in that part of the country. So I've had a long love for his work. It's always spoke to me. And to have the privilege of not only producing but to also direct one of his great classics is more than I could have hoped for.
Yeah. So I can imagine. It's like I'm overwhelmed by. I get overwhelmed by his work for sure.
Yeah. It is. It has a scope like all the greats. I mean, I look at the play and I say, hey, it's this great drama. And when you dig into it, it hits on so many themes that are fundamentally like a snapshot of America, and things that were really relevant in the 50s but still really resonate for a contemporary audience. And that's the thing that I keep finding in his work that keeps drawing me back to it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's great that you actually brought that up. What do you think does resonate with audiences these days? Because it is, it's set in a different time, set in a different place that's very far from Juneau.
Yes.
But like you said, it's timeless and it's accessible. And I'm just wondering where you kind of see that connection for audiences.
Well, he's always had a way of digging into what we might think of as a shadow side of the American dream. We know it's a country that if you're willing to work hard and you can pull yourself up by your bootstraps and make a success out of yourself. And that is our reputation around the world. And we know also with that there can come a kind of blind ambition. There can be things that go to the wayside when you have that kind of ambition that need where other parts of your life don't get attention. So there's addiction issues. There's issues of any kind of marginalized group, racially, bisexual orientation, all kinds of groups that normally would not be a part of what you think of as central to what people aspire to, but something that is present and part of human nature. So greed, ambition, love of money, love of capitalism, and how sometimes those things can be used as a way to escape other deeper pains that run through our lives. And so he's one of the first dramatists to kind of broach those very personal subjects, but tie them with those bigger themes of you know, a country that's medicated by media, even. You know, the scope of what he does in that play is absolutely astounding, and so much of it is just a revelation to those of us working on it.
Yeah. Well, as far as the cast here, I'm wondering if you could just talk a little bit about, the cast itself, and then where you are in the process with the cast.
Absolutely. Well, we've got the great privilege, in no small part due to you and your excellent casting, that we have the terrific Herbert Seguenza of a very famed comedy troupe called Culture Clash. They're absolute legends on the West Coast, where I had a lot of my artistic maturity growing up. I was a big fan, and so it's a bit mind-blowing to be like, hey, I'm directing Herbert Seguenza. Can you even fathom this lack of reality for me? He's an amazing man, and he's an amazing artist, and so he is kind of the patriarch of our company, playing Big Daddy. We have some terrific New York actors. We have the amazing Enrique Bravo, who is a Perseverance regular, who is new to me, but an absolute revelation, a tremendous actor. And his chemistry with our Maggie, Liz Kelly from L.A., is absolutely astounding and hot, settling off the stage.
You know what? She is smoking.
I have to say, it's like she certainly rivals the very best that have ever inhabited Maggie. We've got the wonderful Richie Adan playing Big Mama. And the fact that these actors are so multi-talented. I mean, we have people who are great actors, but they're also amazing choreographers and dancers and writers, and they're painters, and they bring all of that incredible creativity and intelligence to their work in our rehearsal hall. So we're now moving into our technical rehearsals. We're soon to start our first preview performance this coming Sunday, and combined with our amazing design team, Akiko Roach, Art Roach, who has done lighting, Aaron Schultz with costumes. We've got an amazing kind of visual field, along with Rory Stitt, whose opera was just opened this premiered here last week on sound. So what's been created is a really cohesive vision of this piece that I think is completely original, at the same time being very true to Tennessee Williams' work.
Yeah, because it must be a little bit daunting to to just do a classic piece. I mean, there's just a lot. I mean, you know, you see the movie. You know,
absolutely.
There's a very famous movie.
That's right, with Paul Newman and Liz Taylor, no less. I mean, come on. Yeah, and I mean, the thing that's so wonderful, though, you know, I think we all walked into the room somewhat, like, overwhelmed and intimidated by the fact it's like, hey, we're getting to do Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. This is amazing. How are we going to live up to the reputation? But his work is so rich. Tennessee Williams' work and text is so rich that once you just start diving into it, it's almost like a new play. And I think it has the ability to truly be that timeless American classic that wherever, you know, people who will do this 20 years from now and 40 years from now will will unearth new things about American character, and it'll be another reflection back to us. And so ours is very much grounded in the 50s, but it's very much speaks to us today in 2014. And, you know, we're just happy to be a part of that legacy.
Yeah. Well, Robert Barry Fleming, thank you so much for coming to Juno, directing this beautiful play. And it does open March 7th. That's a Friday. We have our first preview this Sunday at 7:30 p.m., and that's a pay-as-you-can. There's a second preview on Wednesday. I don't know what that date is, but the 5th. and then after that, it opens, and then it runs for 4 weeks, and you can get tickets online at perseverancetheater.org or 463-TIXS. And I did want to say one more thing, Robert. You have a website that just kind of has your whole body of work on it and your upcoming projects. I was wondering if you could give us that address, because I actually love reading about it, because it helps me understand a production, actually.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm at robertbarryfleming.com, and that is RobertBarryFleming .com, and you can read all about my work and my career.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining us in Juno here to direct this beautiful production.
Thank you.
And here's a little Stray Cat strut. Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. And in the studio, our final guest, last but definitely not least, is Catherine Hatch here with Arts Up. Hey, how are you?
Hey, Shona.
It's nice to see you.
Thank you very much. Fun to be here.
Yeah. So
running across the parking lot as usual.
I love that, actually. I can tell when people are coming from the Jack because I just look out the window. I'm like, oh, they're here.
Just wait until you can hear us falling on the ice.
So, as always, I'm sure we have a busy arts week, because that's what we do in Juneau.
Pretty much. Tonight will be pretty much the only night off, as this weekend is going to continue well into next week because it's Mardi Gras.
Oh, that's right. I forgot.
I think we forget every year because it's always a different date. This is not, it's not New Orleans here, but people are getting into it. We've got lots of music performances coming up. But first off, this Friday, we've been talking about it all week, all year, all our lives, but the State Museum, this is the last chance, people. From 5 to 9, they're going to be having a really cool party, live music refreshments, a time to say goodbye to the State Museum you know and love, because it's going. It's going, it's gone.
It's going, it's gone. It's turning into another State Museum.
It is, and the new one is going to be so cool, and it's just going to have a really nice cafe. We have to wait till April 2016, so if you want to get in culture, you got to get it in now. And that's it.
Done and done.
No more culture after tomorrow. So get it in for free. You'll be in well with a lot of good company. Everyone's been writing their memories on the wall because it's been free to visit all month. It'll be free tomorrow, too. And if you've got a memory to share, if you went there as a kid on a field trip or to any of the first Fridays that have been happening for years, you know, come and share. Come and eat a snack.
Makes me a little teary.
I think you won't be the only one. It'll be tissues aplenty tomorrow night. And after that, why not head across the street again, back to the Jack? We've got the Juno Student Symphony playing their annual pop concert. This year they're doing music from the movies, which I love. Yeah, I, of course I have love for classical music, but something about John Williams songs they all sound the same, but they all sound awesome.
Because they're epic.
They're epic and dramatic, and it just, you know, it's Harry Potter, it's a whole bunch of other stuff. And
the Judo Student Symphony, I think this is their first concert with Tyree Peeney, and which is really cool, their new conductor.
Yeah. So we'll see how that goes. It's always pay as you can at the door. So just show up and make a donation, and you'll be in for that. They're playing again on Saturday. That'll be a 2 p.m. performance at the Glacier Valley Elementary. But if you want to go downtown on Friday night, that's here at the Jack. We've also got the Science Fair in town this weekend. Not sure if that's something we're hip to here in the cultural scene, but a lot of events going on for that. Also at 7 p.m. tomorrow, they're having a Dark Matter, Dark Energy, and the Fate of the Universe presentation.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's a little bit scary sounding. So maybe you want to go check that out. That's also free. That's at the Marie Drake Planetarium.
Oh, cool, cool.
And right beforehand, you can head over and see the like a public preview of the regional science fair, but the actual public thing will be over the weekend. You can take a lunch break on Saturday and go and see it down at the Marie Drake Gymnasium right downtown. Lots of stuff coming up. We've got, of course, more performances of Opera Tico's Bennu's Birds. This is one thing I don't think people are saying about the performance. It's barely an hour long, like 62 minutes, something like that. So you're in, you're out. It's great for the whole family, locally commissioned, and just there's so much work that's been going into the set design, the costumes, everyone rehearsing, and the sound. It's just going to be really cool to have an opera written by a Juneau native. That's not something every town can brag about.
Not at all.
So get in while you can. We've also got Bamua coming back. I know a lot of you had dashed hopes when the plane was canceled last time they were trying to come around, but we're hoping to fix that. I know because I was refunding everyone's tickets, but come back. They're going to be here Saturday. They're flying in a day early, so we'll just double check. But it's the same great price. $15 is all you need to come down to the Jack and see them in concert. These are people who have a group that has toured the world. It's about high time they came to Juneau.
That's right. Bamua, Saturday night, 7:30 at the Jack, Main Hall.
It's pretty much been a grassroots movement to get them coming back after the great disappointment of them not being able to fly in from the fog. So come out and show your support. It's going to be really nice. What else we got going on? As I said earlier, it's going to be Mardi Gras. But before that, next week, Cat on a Hot Tin Roof is opening up.
Mm-hmm.
But before that, if you want to see it as a sneak preview, pay as you can, of course, come out Sunday night at 7:30. They're doing a Pay-as-you-can preview.
Robert Barry Fleming, the director of that fabulous production. It's going to
exactly.
be pretty exciting.
And if you've never been to one of the Pay-as-you-can previews, they're kind of fun because everyone's still getting the kinks worked out. So I remember going to see Oklahoma, the musical, and having the actors just kind of stop mid-song and make it up as they go along. Because before opening night, that's still all game. So
that's legit.
It's a little bit funny. Cat on a Hot Tin Roof is not as musical, so I wonder what kind of drama might slip up there.
There's always a little...
it's
a drama,
yeah.
actually. Also on Saturday night is that Gold Street Music Concert, and those are just so cool. But this weekend in particular, I look at the lineup and I'm like, whoa, it's Colette Costa, DNR, great band, Ed Schoenfeld, band together with Bob Banghart and Dave Owens. That's at the Resurrection Lutheran Church that Saturday night. Definitely, you know, if you bum you out or that, check one of them out.
And both of them are a good deal. That one's only $5 or bring a snack. So if you have a snack or if you have $5, you can see that great lineup. But getting into the Mardi Gras spirit a little bit early, we've got the North Country Cajun Club playing at the Alaskan Saturday night after all that. So 9:30, if you're still in the mood, go down and see that. We've also got the Wool Pullers live at the Rendezvous the same night.
Oh, that's Saturday night?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, well, we talked to George Kuhar earlier, too, about Playboy Spaceman on Friday night, their CD release party. Awesome.
That sounds like it's going to be an artsy kind of thing. They got money from the Rasmussen for all of their videos that they're doing with it, so that's going to be a full, like, five senses experience there. And then Tuesday, the big day of Mardi Gras, we have we've got the Rookery Wine Dinner, which has not sold out yet, so if you haven't been to one of those, you're going to want to check that out for $65 a seat. Book your tickets there at the Rookery itself or call 463-3013. There's also going to be the Last Chance Jazz Band live at McGivney's out in the Valley. They're going to play traditional Dixieland jazz, which is so perfect for Mardi Gras. And again, something you don't always get in Juneau.
Yeah, super fun. Check that out.
No cover on that one. So just show up, order some of their poutine, and get listening. Jessica Campbell and Sarah Beth Goh are live at the Alaskan that night and also Monday night. both of the times at the Alaskan, so check that out. They're coming up from Nashville, so I'm not sure if that's connected so much to Mardi Gras or just we're bringing out the South, bring them north. That's fine. And after that, we enter Lent and everything stops.
That's
just
good
kidding.
Because we are at a really fabulous stopping point,
yeah.
too. So, but if you want to find out more information, you can check it out at
jahc.org, jahc.org. KT Radio uses the same thing. It's all on there, the full list.
That's right, ktoo.org. You can totally check it out because there's so much going on that we couldn't even fit it in the time that we had. So thank you so much, Catherine, for coming to talk to us with Arts Up.
Everyone have a great weekend.
All right, and this is KTOO Juneau. We rebroadcast on translators K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269 AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K201 AM in Gustavus, K220 BT in Hoonah, and K210 AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you. Thanks so much for tuning in to Juneau Afternoon on Thursday, same time tomorrow, 3 p.m. Have a great day.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Speer. Secretary of State John Kerry is calling.